Blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Saha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharma, Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Saha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May they all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is a holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. by compassionate comprehension that dissipates illusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts: the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibitive precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious and bestow of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day, oh, happy blessed place, oh, happy blessed time, oh, happy blessed path, oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dujyanti tatyanti sabaha. Again and again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering.
If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Shall we forget this morning? Yeah. Well, for the year long, I've decided to look at play and responsibility.
Play and responsibility.
Yeah, that whenever there's an element of responsibility in something that I'm doing, play seems to be just out the window.
Uh-huh. Those two cannot coexist.
They can't coexist. And, you know, I noticed today, actually, it was really great to have some working meditation this morning, because I saw that if it's just me, sometimes it can come in there, but I experience it so much in my working life where, you know, I have people who report to me, and, you know, if there's a responsibility around something that has to do with a team or something, it's it feels like a desert. It's like a play desert.
So the quality that you've kind of honed in on that seems to be one of the eliminating elements of play in the area of responsibility is when it relates to the team or your coworkers, then it's just a desert. When it's just you, it can kind of come in there.
Yeah, and it was great to hear that reflected in that way, because a place that came up to look is just that there's some sort of social expectation for how a person who is in charge or leading is supposed to quote unquote behave, and that might be sort of draining the play pond a little bit out when I'm on my own. It can oftentimes be not always, but it's more available.
Yeah, that's such a good insight to seeing that it's a social situation, what comes into play, not that kind of play, but what comes into being is a sense of a way that you're supposed to be as the boss, or a way that you're supposed to be in that setting, so that's what really drains the play pool.
Mm. Yeah, and I have another thought and it's just left. But I guess the assignment today was to look at some of the beliefs and assumptions. Mm-hmm. And one of the assumptions that I got to was that I somehow can balance play and responsibility, but if there are some people on my team that they're just either or, you know, and that if we head towards play, then, you know, then nothing's going to quote unquote get done, because it's just going to become, something that is, I guess I'm,
So you can handle both.
Right, exactly.
But when you get around them, and you'll still get work done. You'll just make it playful,
right,
or whatever. But when there's people who there's a projection that they can't handle that, that they'll just not get anything done, or they won't be able to hold both elements, or whatever it kind of looks like. The assumption is we can't go with play then, there. Well, there's a lot of assumptions. One is assuming that they can't handle it, and then assuming that because they can't handle it, we can't do it, we can't try it, so we have to default back to just work.
Right, and that's interesting too, because hearing that back, what dropped in was also there's somebody here who doesn't like the way that they play in some ways.
Those other people.
I mean, I play in sort of a Enneagram 5 way sometimes, in a totally other way.
I might be 7.
So, yeah, and so it just feels unsafe, or it feels like, because I can do it in a way that feels like, and so, yeah, so that, that hadn't occurred to me that it's, that sometimes when it does, I mean, it's just a natural part of, I think, you know, when you're at work, it comes out sometimes, and sometimes when I'm managing some sort of project we're working on, I can bring it out, but when I do, it just feels like it just goes in these directions, and I'm like, boy, am I sorry that this is happening right now. You know, it feels disruptive in the office, and, you know, it gets loud, and it's just kind of like, and which is, then it's like, what do other people think, you know? So it kind of, yeah, so there's there's a large number of ideas of how this is supposed, how long it's supposed to last, how it's supposed to manifest, you know, how it goes in conjunction with, yeah, lots to look at.
Because on a process level, what you seem to be pointing to is, so here's this year-long topic that gets interjected into your life, and it drops in to look at it in work life. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is you're seeing all of these things. You're seeing some beliefs and assumptions. You're seeing some elements of control. How long, how loud, how rambunctious, I wish this had... Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like we got to kind of keep it contained, because otherwise, I don't know what it says, that there's something that happened that's not good.
Yeah.
And then it has to be sort of in a five sort of play way, not another, you know, and there's something that comes in that tries to manage or control, and you're just watching it all. Sounds like you're not, you know, it sounds like what you're modeling is the presence that's exploring, it's noticing, it's asking questions.
Yeah, and I guess what hearing that back like that too, it just occurs to me, like, I don't know, that it's a skill, I guess, that all of this is a practice, and you know, it is something that I really value, and, you know, I can do it seems like
play is the thing you really value.
And that, you know, I was looking a little bit at responsibility recently, and like its relationship to control, and so obviously that comes out in this too. Yeah, seeing it all.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. It's like once you start looking in that direction, boy, all of the layers and the connections and the inroads and the, you know, it just all starts coming into view.
And it's so subtle, like the weeds and why these little things happen, and that they're historic in some way that has nothing to do with those actually happening. All of it is just really fascinating.
Yeah, fascinating, and maybe even fun in a playful sort of way. You know, see if that can be an element of the play as well.
Yeah, the looking.
The whole process.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's good.
Very good.
Good.
Thank you.
Good.
Sequoia.
Oh, there's just so much in that. What dropped in that conversation was this, the parallels between punishment and, like, that it's just a strong core belief. And in this condition, culture, in this condition, human, unless we're continually punished, we're not going to improve, or we're not going to get better, or we're not going to produce.
Yeah.
You know, that
punished into producing.
We got to be punished into producing, punished into being good people. And I recall the reading about this. I'm sure this company is no longer in business because it's just would fly in the face of everything we believe. But really, there was a company that cut back the hours of their employees so that they could have like lives. And they actually made it a priority for them to take extended periods of time as vacation, and that you know, they really made it a priority that people had leisure and time to do things other than work. And what they saw was that their productivity just escalated.
Oh, wow.
Because the people were so, like, grateful to be acknowledged in that way that when they were there, they wanted to contribute to that company in a big way because, you know, they felt such gratitude for being treated as humans.
Wow.
And, I mean, that was radical.
That is radical.
That is just so radical. And, I mean, it's not it just makes perfect good sense, but it just is so radical in the face of how we're so conditioned to just be, got to ride ourselves all the time, or we might just, like, fly off and do something, you know?
Yeah. It truly is what I project underlies that whole philosophy that you're describing is the recognition that there is nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Because because when you come from that place, of course people will do what they want to do to contribute to the good of the whole, and then they get lives, and we get it all, you know, all of that. We're all in this together, and our goodness is already established, kind of.
Exactly. It's acknowledging our inherent goodness instead of our inherent badness.
Yeah.
And I mean, I thought of it because we have there's nothing wrong with the retreat going on right now. And it's the core of that. So I'm looking at that for, you know, it's pretty deep with me. And even though I have a book learning when the pedal hits the metal, you know, there's still that, are you sure? You know, like, you know, when I feel time pressures and I feel like, it seems so real that, you know, to fly in the face of all of that and go, and like, go, maybe go sit and have a cup of tea in the middle of
Crunch time. Perceived crunch time.
And actually, I woke up this morning and trying not to think, but recording about, and this has to do with that, what would it look like to make the love of this human being the first priority? You know, to just care so exquisitely and let the rest take care of itself. Mm-hmm. And which kind of connects with some guidance I was listening to that I received a couple of years back, actually. And what the guy was saying is that I don't know the language.
Yeah.
She didn't get to enjoy herself.
Mm-hmm. So Gloria doesn't really.
She does not really get to enjoy herself, you know. And it that all comes back. I don't know. It all circles around.
It does. Yeah.
You know, to that, like, play, enjoyment, what the heck does that?
Yeah. Well, and to go with what you started with that company. So if you were the CEO of your company called Sequoia, and you got to make the rules, you got to set the policies, and what would it look like if the employee, the one who is the cook, the one who is the care for the custodian, the one who is the whatever, that all of them get to have joyful, enjoying life, enjoyment in their life. They got to have time of leisure. They got to play. They got to have reasonable work hours. They got to have adequate pay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
whatever they needed,
right.
the pay would match what they truly needed.
Yeah.
And you got to create that company for yourself. And so somebody, we know, kind of ego is saying, it's crunch time. It's 20 minutes till the meal has to be out or whatever.
Right.
But her feet are hurting and she needs to go sit down and have a cup of tea for 5, 7, 8, 12 minutes. You know, does she get
right.
to do that? That, you know, what would that look like?
Well, yeah, that's brilliant. To even to spend time writing out the bylaws,
yeah.
you know, this fun enjoyment-based company,
yeah.
and what's our statement of purpose here?
Yeah, what's your mission?
You know,
what's our mission resources
and to like you know keep that in the forefront of awareness.
Yeah,
and you know, as you were reflecting on, I just thought, it's as the cook, it can get really believable that, you know, if the meal table's rolled out and there's not food on it, well, you know, that just doesn't work. So it can get really believable that there's, there are hard and fast deadlines, but it's just that conditioned thing again. It's like, looking at people as inherently bad rather than inherently good.
Mm-hmm.
If the meal table got rolled out and there wasn't everything on it, like people would get angry?
Yeah. What would they do?
Would they
storm the kitchen?
Storm the kitchen. I suspect they would, they now have a sense of humor.
Or we don't
know.
Or we have tea until one till
really, you know, relief about it. And so.
Don't forget where you're going mm-hmm. about. But again, what you pointed out with the company was profits went up.
Right.
So there's that sneaky little belief that if you did make these really generous
mm-hmm.
bylaws,
mm-hmm.
that meals would probably sometimes be late,
mm-hmm.
sometimes food wouldn't be on the table, and that's just
that is the conversation that drives the stress.
Yeah.
To not care.
Yeah.
To not enjoy.
To scare you out of doing it the other way.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know. I cannot think of any place, there are, you know, other places, but, I mean, kitchen and cooking was made for play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is just such a playful activity,
yeah.
you know, you just got to, throw stuff around and chop
yeah.
it up and make colors and, it's just like the most incredible playful thing,
yeah.
you know, and so I can see how the system just works so hard to keep it serious and life-threatening.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
It has to work
it
so hard because inherent in all of those colors and textures
mm-hmm.
and flavors is so much play.
Yeah.
And it's got to try to make it life-threatening, deadline-oriented, serious.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So you're so clearly seeing and laying out for all of us the opponent's playbook.
It takes
what is so inherently playful
yeah.
and has to make it serious and
yeah.
all the ways it doesn't.
It's so good to see that, you know, there's just that forgetting that the areas where conditioned mind is the most cruel and hard are the areas where there's like the most opportunity to
like in direct proportion or
yeah
something.
Exactly
yeah.
to just have a good time
yeah
you know and
or inverse proportion
inverse
or whatever.
Proportion or whatever
you know.
So anyway so that's great okay bylaws and
yeah.
great
thank you Janet.
That was really funny for me because I've never thought of the kitchen as playground.
Uh-huh.
So I've got the different
you
conditioning.
Got a whole
weekend. Yeah. I know. It's like, and what am I doing all week? Right.
Uh-huh.
So, I love this discussion because last month I had an opportunity to take on a job that was, the requirements were that I would do it 15 hours a week, and I had to figure that out. And for the longest time, I was like, no, I can't do that. That's going to take away from my fun time. That's going to take away from my time. It was just conditioning, like, no, what about your time?
Uh-huh.
You know, you're like, why are you giving your time away?
Uh-huh.
And so I really was so keyed in on that, that I decided that, well, as it happened, they said, we just want to do it month by month.
Oh.
And I was like, well, that is awesome, because I'd love to experiment and really, like, step back and do it and see if there's any truth to what I'm being told.
Yes. So you've got this great laboratory
here
where you get to experiment. So the voices have showed up to do what they're going to do. The person asking you to do the work has set up such a great structure that you can look at it month by month. You've got your hours, and you can really see the whole experiment laying out.
And I can plan it out however I want. And so I tried different scenarios, and my only requirement in my little company there was that I had to really just pay attention.
Yeah, your one job description,
No
matter what task you're doing, is to pay attention.
Yes, to pay attention.
Uh-huh.
And it was so fabulous to see that I had fun, I would say 85% of the 100%. There were some times when conditioning got in there with, you know, nag, 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 or this or that. Or maybe it was true. It was like I had set it up, you know, a way that I wouldn't want to do, but the bottom line was, it was like, wow, that was such a lie. That was such a lie, and I almost just didn't do it because it was so convincing. That why would I ever want to do it? Why would I want to give up my time?
Yeah, oh, that is so good.
So there's just been this whole thing about time and what is it, and looking at that, but. So it was wonderful, and I just had to, you know, had like a little review of the month the other day, and I was like, and she said, well, what did you learn? And I said, well, I learned so much about the fact that I didn't know anything.
Wow. So there's a lot in there. So there's a couple of things to just sort of to reflect, and I know on a process level, which is that when the offer was made initially, you heard a lot of, why would you want to do that? No. Don't give away your time. You know, all of that. And you almost went with it, but you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's good to see right there.
I didn't, because I realized I didn't really know.
Yeah. That's big.
And it was like, wow, I don't know that.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I was so like, I was like, yes, I like caught it.
Yeah. And going to a place of don't know. And then bringing the element of curiosity, of experimentation. And then it sounds like a lot of presence, because to even be able to say that 85% to 15, you know, in other words, you would have had to have been there to even know that, well, there were some times that ego was nagging, and, you know, so to even be able to see that. And then when asked what you learned, it was that you don't know.
I know.
So much. And that ego lies. Seeing that very clearly.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm really glad that we are having this discussion this morning, so I could just go over that. And it also, the other thing that ego always says is, it's going to be forever. And you're like, you're too old for forever. You know?
You're like, if you take this, it's going to be a lifetime commitment, and you're too old to do something like
I don't
that.
Have that many days left, so why would I want to do something that's going to take forever when I'm so old? I mean, it just is
wow.
Convoluted instead of...
And kind
I wonder
of insulting.
I wonder if this would be fun.
Yeah.
You know, or could this be fun? Or... Do I know nothing about this? And that's, I really want to, like, bring that sense of don't know into so many, question so many other things.
Yeah. It's so clear, the two paths that you're laying out. You know, there's that one of, it's going to be forever. You're losing because you're losing your time.
Yeah,
and all
I'm always
of that.
Losing.
Yeah, and you're too old. Well, get that jab in there too. You know, and just really sort of a big no path. And then the, well, I don't know. And then curiosity and trying and yes, the yes path and all the different ways that looks like it. And you're making the choice that you want to live and don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the choice.
Yeah. Yeah, and the choice might be different at another point, but that's, it's sort of like that's not my business right now. I don't need to be there. I just need to be right here.
Well, because it's a it's a process choice, not a content choice.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like it worked out for you to say yes to this content, but on an underlying, you know, because of all the stuff you've been talking about, but on an underlying level, you were choosing the process of yes instead of the process of, well, an automatic knee-jerk no.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
At least that's what I'm saying. Is that sort of what...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that automatic knee-jerk no always never leads to anything that is really helpful for this person at all.
Yeah, it doesn't lead to anything helpful to the human at all, a process or a content level.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of... It kind of acts like it's looking out for us.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I believe it a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now that it keeps telling me I'm so old, I'm like, okay, well,
well,
I'm going to figure this out now.
Yeah, really. You're right. I'm old enough to know better than the rest of the year. Well, and because you're paying attention, you're seeing through its lies, as you just mm-hmm. described. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
kind of good
and let me just say one more thing, and that's fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's fun.
That's something, it reminds me of what Sherry, I can't remember what the context was, but she made that point in one of the recent radio shows, that is what is playful and fun.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's that whole seeing through it, going with it and being beaten up, not so much. But standing outside of ego and looking at it, you know, that I see you, that's fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. I do enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you. Phil. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is a good discussion. And I've seen a lot around this topic. It's like... the ultimate game is beating out conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, it's like, you know, that really is it. And it's like, so, like you were just saying, every time that I see through it, that is so fun.
Uh-huh.
That's so joyful. And when I was looking at how far back all this goes, of course, it seems to go back all the way to homework.
As a kid,
we used to get all kinds of homework from school, and I really enjoyed learning, and yet they made homework like a punishment, you know. And so, you had to do your homework, and my family didn't, but, you know, teachers did. If you didn't bring it, you'd get in trouble. So you had to do your homework, and then you could play.
Uh-huh.
And,
wow.
You know, for years that was how my life was divided up, and it still can be. But I'm starting to see through it. You know, I think even when I lived here, work and play became the same thing. It was like that was the play, because that's what kind of play we had.
Yeah,
and so it was fun building buildings and that stuff.
Yeah,
so... And plumbing, I love plumbing. But anyhow, so what I was seeing there were, like, in my life right now, there's two strands, it seems, you know. Two of some big assumptions. So one is that things I don't want to do, don't like to do, conditioning doesn't want to do, conditioning says I don't like to do. Conditioning makes certain things like work, and that's more, feels more like punishment. You have to get these done before you can do something you want to do. Mm-hmm. These emails or these this or these that, when in actuality they're not hard. I don't not want to do them. Mm-hmm. All this stuff, but it's, that's kind of where the, mm-hmm, I can feel the resistance that would make it feel less fun.
Mm-hmm. Like, let me see if I'm tracking. So, like, there's not, from your own experience, that there's nothing inherently unpleasant about anything, really, but in this case, the emails. And what gets imposed is this attitude that you acquired in those very formative years, that you have to do your work before you can play. And that, then it was, there's sort of an element of punishment or dictating.
Or and we're like, in cooking, there is a deadline. Mm-hmm. Have to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
But just because there's this have to get it done doesn't mean it can't still be fun.
Yeah.
But the way the conditioning set up,
yeah,
it can turn into that.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm, the how.
Yeah.
It's not the what.
No.
And just because it has to be done, deadline. There's nothing even inherently unfun about a deadline.
No, not at all.
Until that attitude, that conditioned attitude gets imposed.
Because it can be very much like a game.
Yeah.
Which I never did like games with timers, but still, that could be what it's like. I learned to enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it reminds me of the... then there's another strand of assumptions, which is I have to get it done. It has to be right.
Okay.
It has to be right, or there's repercussions, like punishment.
Yeah.
And so that reminded me that the Chinese archer, and I can't always remember this very well, but the idea is, if you're trying to hit the bullseye, if you're trying to do it, get it right, then it's liable to miss it. Not only that, because you've got so much angst and everything going on, you probably will miss it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a practiced person and you just relax and let it go more than more than not, you'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll hit the bullseye.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is such an important point, isn't it? That, so I was reading something recently where the example this author used was playing ping pong.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're trying, then you're liable to hit the ball in all kinds of weird places. But if you just relax, the arm seems to know how to do it.
Yeah,
and to play quite relaxed, quite naturally. And it seems like that's what the point about the archery is. It's like being in accord with what is so. And if what is so right now is archery, then it's sort of a natural way for it to turn out.
Yeah, you just become one with the whole
thing. You become
thing
one with it. Yeah.
And it goes, and if it didn't, it'd do it again or something.
Yeah.
But, and so it's like those, seems like those two things are the biggest deterrents for me for having everything be fun, because that's the way I choose to live my life, is to have everything be fun. Mm-hmm. That's how when I go to work, it's like, okay, it's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But if either of those comes in, mm-hmm, which sometimes I want to do,
mm-hmm,
I notice this isn't fun anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so helpful to lay them out so you know what to watch for.
Yeah.
So you can watch for that have to, and then you can watch for that being graded, being...
Got to get it right.
You get it right. And the third thing, the third signal that you've articulated is when you can feel it when it's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know the antidotes to both of those.
Yeah, it's just to get back to presence.
And that in fun is sort of, in this case, it sounds like you're using it as a synonym for presence.
Yeah. And I, Sherry told me early on, watch for the joy bubbles, if they're there or not. And fun, the joy kind of comes with the fun, you know. And the whole experience of life is like, lights on, lights off, you know. I was just seeing, too, how with the right, that's where the whole thing about how others perceive, you know, because the grades and everything come from outside, so how others perceive, are going to perceive me,
yeah.
You know, and so that carries like big
reverberations.
And then the not liking with the punishment, that does too carry big, you know, reverberations. So it really is interesting, you know, how with this year-long retreat for me, how one little thing, and you know something about it, you know maybe a lot about it, but the way we're looking at it, it's just like you could see all the tentacles that are coming out.
Yeah, it really does seem to be, it's like what we were saying earlier, there's just layers and ties and connections and everything, and they're just being so illumined by the process, by the whole year long, and the repetitive nature of the monthly process. And just one other thing that, I don't know if this is where you're going, Phil, but as you lay that out and talk about how we were conditioned in the schoolwork and the grades and all of that, it's like, just takes me to a place of, well, bless our hearts, no wonder we have, the joy bubbles are getting squashed out of us and getting popped in, and we don't need to enjoy them, you know.
Yeah, exactly, and it's a good picture of a small portion of how we were conditioned, and you add that to everything other way we were conditioned, you're right. That's a real cause for celebration that we can even, you know, be happy at all.
Yeah,
really.
And celebration because we see it, and as we know from our own experience, we've all been practicing long enough to seeing it is all that's required.
It's all that's required, and that's just one big gratitude for practice. I don't know how I'd be without it.
Yeah, but I hear you.
Wouldn't be fun.
It wouldn't be fun.
Fun either.
Thank you. That was really interesting. So as we know, I have the great privilege and good fortune to produce books for the guides, and on the book that we're working on now, the deadline is
looming. We're all waiting with bated breath. The communication book, you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. I forget to see the many hours as play, so this is a really good focus. And on this book, it was just, I've been taking and practicing watercolor for taking lessons and practicing for a few years now. And so it was decided that I would do the illustration for the cover. Well, okay. Sherry came up with an idea, and so I played with it and did a couple of just quick little mock-ups and photographed them and texted them to Sherry and Ashwini for their feedback. These are mock-ups. This is the kind of thing we could do. What do you think? And they chose one of them. And so I set to work taking it into a more sort of structured picture and doing little studies for the various elements. And Ashwini came over this morning to work on part of on the musings article. Mm-hmm. And I showed her what I was doing with the cover illustration, and she said, "We liked that first one."
Uh-huh.
And it just has blown me away.
Uh-huh.
That I found it, I looked at it again, and I said, "Yeah, I see." And so now I'm in a real, it's emotional, I'm in a real conundrum. The art I like best, watercolor I like best, has that quality, has that free, masterful quality. Those are the words I give to it. The word I gave to my quick mock-up was, I don't even know.
Not free.
Not free, and certainly not masterful.
Quick. You said quick. Kind of quick.
It was kind of quick. I didn't think about it too much.
Yeah.
Just kind of.
Even mock-up. Even yeah. Mock-up is not not masterful.
No.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So here's where I'm left, I guess. I know that one of the, it's exactly like practice. You can't try not to try. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't get free by really striving to be free. Mm-hmm. But you can't not do it either. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so place where I am with the watercolor, with all of that. I mean, we'll use the original drawing. Mm-hmm. And going forward with whatever I choose to do, I can see that it's going to be a process, and it has been, there has been an element of it in there anyway, of just being free with it.
Free with it?
Yeah. Yes, there's a process. Yes, there are skills. Yes, there are techniques. And within that. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason it's so emotional is I can see that in practice. Mm-hmm. And I love that about practice. Okay, I'm seeing what is being called a problem as I'm talking about it. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem. It's a practice.
Mm. Yeah.
Learning golf was the same way.
Uh-huh.
You do it wrong until you see how to do it right, wrong and right being less dualistic terms than yeah. we sometimes use them.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you say you're seeing how the voices are trying to make it a problem, when in fact it's a practice.
It's a revelation.
It's a revelation. And is that where the suffering is? Right there?
Yeah.
Because all of it, and what you love about practice as a revelatory process in and of itself, is beautiful. It's wonderful. Not a thing wrong. No suffering there. But when that gets added to it, that being the voices,
that's exactly
the point.
That's exactly
the suffering point.
Where it trips over from being play and practice and opportunity and blessing to problem, doing it wrong, have to work hard. You'll never get it right. Okay. Nothing new in that.
Well, because I project that learning, because what you love about golf was not that you were so good at it and you won all these tournaments and all that. It was that you loved the game. Everything about it, the learning, the hitting, getting it right, getting it wrong, whatever, all of that, the whole package, just like in practice. You love the whole package. And then, and just like watercolor, right? And
yes, and I'm at the place, yeah. The word that just went through my mind, what I almost just said was, I'm at the place in the struggle to learn watercolor. Where? And that's part of it. That's part of how I've been seeing it. That it's a struggle. That it practices a struggle. Mm-hmm. And that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not true.
Yeah. It's essentially not true. When those voices get added, it makes it the struggle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or it makes, maybe a better way of saying it, it makes our experience of it struggle. Because it doesn't change the essence of practice just because the voices are added to it, you know, something like that. But our experience of it is what becomes struggle. It's really subtle and helpful to see.
You know, I guess it is. It doesn't feel subtle at all. To me, it feels like just a hammer over my head every day about one thing or another. That's okay, cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
Got done with the retreat here and a couple weeks ago, and so I feel very new to the practice. All the voices were like, it's in a different place, I don't know where to park, and there's a retreat going on. I mean, everything was telling me not to come today because it was going to be different somehow, and then the voices were saying, don't share because you don't know what you're talking about. So I don't know what I'm going to say right now.
Well, first of all, good for you for putting up your hand and for getting here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And finding your way to the pavilion.
I did.
And so, you know, that is just such a, I don't know, a testament to the willingness that we you know, embody. Because you were supposed to just stay wherever you would have stayed,
mm-hmm.
right?
I was.
And you just kept taking the next step and getting here and now are even talking.
I know.
Good for you.
And the willingness, I just the listening and recording has really helped me see that I'm not gonna give up on you.
Yeah.
So I keep saying I'm just not gonna give up on you, and that and then I just read the fear book, and just the, let's just do one little step at a time, and And the conversation today, it was just like speaking directly to, of course, kind of what I'm going through. Not, I don't have a job. I always jump to the next thing somebody offers, and so now I'm having a hard time figuring out how do I go about finding something that I could have fun at and be financially rewarded for. Yeah. And I'm kind of have practicing kind of just saying, oh, well, that sounds good, or oh, we'll see, instead of saying, sure, let's try it. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great conversation today. I just love the idea of, because I've been in business a couple times for myself, and it's like, wow, why don't I create the perfect business for being me? Uh-huh. Or the mention the bylaws, uh-huh, and all that, and uh-huh, I just love that idea of, yeah, creating a good kind of a good place from where maybe that's where I start from to look.
Yeah. That's a good insight there, because what you're seeing is that there's a way that in the past, or we might say the karmic pattern or whatever, conditioned pattern, is just jump. Mm-hmm. Whenever something's offered, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know? And now you've got all these tools, you've got all this willingness, and you've got the wherewithal to say, well, okay, let's just wait. I'm not gonna give up on Jana. I'm gonna see what is the best thing for her. And so the answer might be, well, maybe. Well, let's see. And then even coming here today, you've got more tools, more possibilities. Okay, what if we build the Jana company, mm-hmm, with the bylaws that are going to support me, her, mm-hmm, and let's take those steps. And it's just like, you know, we sometimes talk about life is like having the hand on the small of our back, mm-hmm, just directing us. And there you are, you know, taking the direction wherever it's offered, and just moving with it, mm-hmm, as best we can, mm-hmm, you know,
yeah,
every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And seeing, you know, and seeing what unfolds in every moment that can be both financially rewarding and fun and supportive, mm-hmm, and not just kind of defaulting to one over the cost of everything else, mm-hmm, you know.
Yeah, and as you were saying that, it's like that little voice was like, oh, you can't have all that. You know, like, that's way, you know, beyond the scope of, you know, your lifetime here.
Oh, really? Yeah. Thank you for being an expert on what's possible.
Right, and, you know, in the mention, and, you know, this year I feel, somebody else mentioned, I feel old this year, you know, I turned 60, I'm like, I just feel like, okay, what's now what? And uh-huh, yeah, and so it's that, like, well, you've kind of, there's not a lot, there's less time left.
Uh-huh.
And so can you really have, you know, all that?
Yeah. And it sounds like you're seeing that's the voice that you don't want to be. It doesn't get invited into the boardroom when the bylaws are getting written.
Thank you. I hope to remember that.
Well, because, and you, mm-hmm, just said it, to see, well, now you can't really have all that, mm-hmm, you know. Well, you're kind of too old for that. You know, that, mm-hmm, time has passed. Mm-hmm. Now you've just got a whatever. Mm-hmm. That's all downhill from here. Mm-hmm. However we phrase that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it sounds like intuitively you know that that's the voice of egocentric karmic, mm-hmm, conditioning self-hate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're right. So the practice that we're doing, that we're all doing, is once we recognize that voice for what it is, as we recognize it for what it is, to turn the attention to, as Janet was pointed out, the yes path, the alternative path, the voice that you are saying, mm-hmm. I'm never going to give up on you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll help you create whatever life you, mm-hmm. whatever life you want. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, that's such a better option, isn't mm-hmm. it? Yeah. Thank you. Oh, is there more real quick? We have a couple more minutes.
I was just going to say that it's just what was spoken about earlier about God bless us for, you know, how we've been conditioned, and that, you know, we can still find that little, we can still go for the joy, or we can still, and that last conversation about, it just like such a demonstration of that which we are seeking is causing us to seek, you know, how every one of us in this room can relate to that. Being told we can't do, you know, you can't do it, you can't, you know, all kinds of good reasons to not follow your heart,
mm-hmm.
you know, and yet the heart gets followed,
yeah,
and it gives me goosebumps,
yeah.
you know, and it just yatters on and tells you you're too old and da 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 and all that stuff. Well, that's nice. You know? it's so extraneous, and art, and it's so extraneous.
It truly is.
And the heart just, you know, it's just like, I just have this image, you know, this big heart just marching forward, and all that gook just flying off behind here, you know, flying off this way, flying off that way, it doesn't matter. And we don't even know how it's happening. You know?
Oh, that is such a good image. And what can cause us to suffer is when we forget that what we are is the heart.
Yeah, we just lose sight that,
yeah.
Wait a minute. Yeah, we're back there with our attention on the gook.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing that what's happening is like this
power.
This power forward. I don't even know if it's forward, but you know.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. But this, yeah. Whatever. This big heart.
Whatever direction.
Right. Exactly. Whether it's up, down, sideways, or twirling. I don't know. But
it's true, though.
Yeah.
It's all that is.
Yeah.
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 And your point is such a beautiful one, that when we come together in like things like this and the year long and all the different practice ways, we get so clear on what's actually real,
mm-hmm.
and powerful and mm-hmm. loving and mm-hmm. compassionate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really gives you inspiration, doesn't it, for
it sure does.
For human beings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting gig to have, isn't it? Mm. As a human being. Thank you for that. Thank you all.